and good evening, and welcome to KRBD's newest show. This is Politics Now, and our hosts for this show are Bob Weinstein, former city mayor, Democrat, Kyle Johansson, former representative, Republican.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Deb Turnbull. I will be the button pusher here tonight. I'll hand this over to these fine, fine gentlemen. And I'm going to lay down a few rules before we get started, though. Okay. We were talking about proper etiquette for civil discourse, and so proper etiquette for all call-ins, because this is a call-in show, and we invite you to give us a call during the course of the hour. We will be here for an hour. There is no profanity acceptable on the air, and so that would be a disconnect by me if I hear any. And then there's no name calling. We know that politics can make people a little anxious.
Yeah.
Is that a good word?
That's a good word.
And so we want to make sure that we all behave well with one another during the course of this hour.
And it's not because of us. We can take it. It's just there are people out there listening who want a civil discourse.
Absolutely. Right? And that's what we'd like to see happen as well. And then with that said, I would like to let everyone know that the views and opinions that will happen this evening on the air are not the views and opinions of this radio station, its staff, its board of directors, and most of its members.
And I could just simply say, I would certainly hope not.
Okay. With that said, I'm going to give you the phone number, and I'll break in here from time to time or ask Kyle or Bob to remind you. Our phone number is 225-9655. That's for Ketchikan and Metlakatla. And then 1-800-557-5723 for Prince of Wales Island. Okay, everybody's writing that down. So I'm going to turn my mic down and turn this over to the two of you. Where shall you begin?
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, where shall Bob begin? It's the Bob and Kyle show. So because he is my elder, and I was always taught to look up to my elders, that was one of my first political lessons from Representative Williams, who I worked for a long time ago.
Yes, you did.
Always listen to your elders. At least listen to them. You don't have to do what they say, but, you know, respect. I think Bob was going to talk a little bit about why this show even exists. We were going to kind of kick it around a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. This show, as the name suggests, is going to be a discussion of politics, and it's called Politics Now. So we're going to talk about things that are recent or happening now, et cetera, et cetera. It can be federal issues, it can be state issues, and it can be local issues,
right,
with state and government and city of Saxman and others. So, we probably might want to start tonight, since the legislature ended its special session a couple
right.
of weeks ago, probably gave us enough fodder for some discussion. We had some Supreme Court decisions at the federal level, perhaps, if we have time or if listeners are interested in talking about those and what they mean or don't mean, we can get into that too. So I guess I'd like to suggest that we talk about the recent legislative session, which, from my perspective, and admittedly I've only been in Ketchikan for 40 years, but I would characterize it as the worst legislature ever.
He's only been here 40 years. Yeah, I was seven rocking around these streets when you showed up, okay? Seven, just FYI. Before we get into, I know you've been wanting to talk about this for a long time, Bob, but I want to accentuate the point that you were talking about, how important it is. There's really a vacuum of discussion about politics on the airways. No other radio station really talks about it in the listening area. Juno has a little bit of discussion, but it's not a lot. Dennis Egan has a show, or used to. So there's a little bit up in the capital city, but there's not a lot down here. So many issues, and Bob and I have been active in politics for, it's been a long time. I mean, we've been working together since the early 90s, and you were active before that. We know a lot of people, and I think talking about those things, that's why I really want people to call in and bring things up and spark some conversation, because I think between the two of us, from what we've seen in our experience and your obvious left-leaning ways, You're supposed to chuckle.
I'm smiling.
It's radio. You have to chuckle. Right. You have to be audible.
Bob, they can't see you.
They can't see you. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. But
he's
anyway,
already throwing out those labels.
I'm trying to get him fired up.
That's
here.
Sort of what some right-leaning people do.
That's what right-leaning people do. But I do think it's important. I do think there's a real importance to this, to talk about these issues. And I think a lot of people, when they start hearing about this show, I think they're going to get interested, and I think this is a great place. Another thing that KRBD does for the community, provides a place for discourse. It's a good deal.
Right, so, and hopefully, you know, we'll provoke some thought on the part of you listeners
exactly.
In the listening area. You might agree with one or both of us on an issue. You might totally disagree with one or both of us on an issue, but perhaps you'll learn something or learn something about an issue that we bring up that you didn't know about, and you might think, hey, I'm glad they discussed it. I had no idea that somebody was doing something or that right. something had happened.
Right, and bringing those things like today, we're going to be talking about some federal issues. I think one thing I'd like to bring up later on in the show is about the mining across the transboundary mining. Dan Ortez just had a letter out talking about I want to say Ruth Chris, but that's the steakhouse, right? It's Red Chris?
Yes.
Red Chris Ruth, up Red, by Wrangell, yeah.
I'm thinking of Ruth. I'm hungry. I didn't eat before I got here,
uh-oh.
Right?
Well, I'd like you to circle back around, though. Bob put that pretty provocative statement on the table. What did you say, Bob?
Well, I said, why don't we start with the legislature? Because, you know, it's current.
That's true.
They just ended. Governor needs to sign a budget maybe by today. I'm not even sure.
Yeah, so, by midnight tonight.
So, you know, earlier I said, hey, I think it's the worst legislature ever. And let me start off by saying why. This is not the first fiscal crisis that the state of Alaska has had, by no means. We had one that I can remember in the mid-'80s when Governor Bill Sheffield was in the governor's mansion.
Exactly.
And I remember having been a school superintendent for Southeast Island School District at the time. The price of oil had gone down so much that in, I think, July, just before school was starting, he impounded 10% of school monies mm-hmm. just because they didn't have it. And but he worked with the legislature, and legislators of both parties worked with one another to make some decisions, make some priorities.
To find a solution, right?
And to find a solution. Right. There was another one, I think, during the Knowles years mm-hmm. when Frank Murkowski came into office.
There have been multiple. In fact, we're on an everlasting, it's like an everlasting gobstopper of fiscal insanity with Alaska. Every year it's a crisis. Just functionally, it's structured in crisis mode. But as you've said, over the years, there have been particular crises. My biggest problem, I will agree with you, to a point, only because of, at the very end, the suggestion that we shut government down, that we copy the dysfunction in Washington, D.C., that was one of the major suggestions out of the leadership of the legislature. So we're just going to shut it down. I mean, that broke the line. Up until then, it seemed like it was business as usual. A lot of statements and positioning towards the end, but just like the years before that you brought up, Bob, there was always an end game. There was always a solution. Nobody ever even considered the nuclear option, and now it was just brought out just like, well, we're just going to shut government down. What are you going to do about that?
Right. I mean, there was some brinkmanship at the end, but I want to get back to that a little bit, because not only did they not have to do that, my question is they went into the session knowing there was a right. huge multi-billion-dollar hole. What did they do? They talked about changing daylight savings time. How many listeners out there feel that changing daylight savings time is a more important issue than fixing a budget hole and developing a long-term fiscal plan so that critical services like education, transportation, public safety, domestic violence, and so on that are funded by the state can continue? They didn't do it. They didn't do their jobs. And they had not only one, two special sessions, and only ended it when, you know, the governor and the minority, and I think the public said enough is enough. You know, if your option is to have a budget, work with the minority to be able to access the constitutional budget reserve, that's what we want you to do. We don't want you to shut down government. And they knew that if they did, I think they'd be
certainly not going to shut down government for that. But if you look at the and this will really make Bob really super happy, why it actually happened. You know, none of this had to do with the budget. None of it had to do with any of that stuff. What it all has to do is next year end in 2 years. There were two issues on the table. One is the contract, the 2.5% that the people, the public employees, were asking for, which was a negotiated, signed contract. It was the third year of the contract. And the legislature said, we're not going to fund it. We're not going to fund that 2.5%. And basically what that was a shot across the bow, because guess what comes up here in the next few months is negotiations for that contract again. Yep. So what it was from the legislative standpoint was a legislature, because the governor negotiates with the unions, not the legislature. Legislature signs the check. So the legislators historically get frustrated because they have no say in the negotiations. They're powerless. They can just sit there and send out press releases and try to get the governor to do such and such. So at the end of all of this entire budget shutdown threat that all of these state employees received notices, stressful on lives, on people's lives.
Disrupting 10,000 families exactly. In Alaska, needlessly.
Yeah, that's very true. We're gonna be on the same side on this one. It's going to happen, right? But basically the deal was in the end, everybody got what they wanted. And the legislature got what's called intent language, and they told the governor to negotiate really tough next time. That was the end product of
right.
this.
They said, pretty please, governor, would you please – I mean, the language wasn't literally that, but right. the tone of it was, pretty please, next year when negotiations opens, would you please hold the line and not increase right. salaries and benefits?
And how much did that cost?
It's like, duh, really? Do you think Governor Bill Walker, who has shown himself, in my opinion, to be a very fiscally responsible leader in the state of Alaska, is going to go willy-nilly increasing expenses to exacerbate the budget hole? I don't think so. So my issue is they should have had a budget, and from my perspective, they could have had a budget approved by the end of the regular session.
Oh, absolutely.
And instead they
well, they had to make a point, and that was the next. When you negotiate next time, you have to be tough, Governor. And that's all they got out of it was intent language that said, you be tough on the unions, Governor Walker. But here's the other thing. Here's the other reason why you're going to love this one. Here's the other reason why special session lasted so long. Remember the Aaron's Law, the bill that everybody loves that got
yes.
hornsnoggled and taken into
Senator
Dunleavy's committee. Yes. Why on earth, Bob, would a senator that nobody in the state knows from the MATSU, why on earth would he grab the most high-profile piece of legislation and absolutely destroy it in his committee and get on the front page of every newspaper in Alaska? Why would he do that?
Well, we'll get into that perhaps if we have time, because that
gets us
at the federal
issues. No, we have to talk about it. You have to answer it now.
Well, okay,
you know why.
I will answer it now, because...
Because he's running for what?
Because he may run against Lisa Murkowski right.
in the Republican primary.
He has said that. We know that.
How do you get your name statewide?
Right.
Take the most controversial bill and you twist it upside down and you get in every paper in the
right.
nation.
And I think what he did, and I think as you're saying, was intentional, but I also think it was absurd and obscene. And it had the reaction statewide from people who want to protect kids, and at the end of the day, Aaron's Law, and there was a combination with a complementary law passed without Mike Dunleavy's nonsense.
Okay, so can I interrupt you for a second?
You can interrupt me for 2 seconds.
I'm going to ask you. Now, it might not be fair because you're in the news business and you hear a lot of stuff. And have you heard of Dunleavy very much before this Aaron's Law thing?
No, I hadn't.
Did you learn about him a little bit in the last month
I
or so?
I did learn about him a little bit.
Now you know who he is, don't you?
Well,
you know his
and
name,
now
don't
I
you?
Really know who he is. Thank
See?
You.
Right.
But
I'll go ahead, Deb.
Okay, we have a caller on line one, And so you're kind of in a place where maybe this is a good question, and I'm going to put Caleb up. Caleb, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to fix the phone. It's a little scratchy. Okay, can you hear us? Hello? Caleb? All right, so I'm not sure why, but he wants you two to explain the differences between the extreme left view and an extreme right view. Is there a way to do that? Because you were kind of in this...
On what? On an issue or just in general?
Yeah, well, surrounding especially the issue now over the Confederate flag, which has been flown in public places, and I can understand the issue there, but also a lot of private places deciding not to sell that merchandise anymore. I guess my question is more... In the past, in the South, Democrats were traditionally in the South, and a lot of them were slave owners. So I'm just kind of wondering where that shift took place, if there ever was a shift, between that mentality going from the extreme left over to the extreme right.
When a shift happened? Well, I think historically it happened. And, you know, as you said, Southern... politicians and Congress at one time were largely Democrats, and where that changed and where the Confederate flag being flown in modern times, because there was a period of time when it wasn't, was in the 50s and 60s. And you had Strom Thurmond, who was from South Carolina, changing parties from Democrat. He ran, I think, for president as a, quote, Dixiecrat, mm-hmm. and eventually became a Republican because Democrats, starting with, President Kennedy, in fact, I think really President Truman, Kennedy, Johnson, were proposing civil rights laws to finally bring equality to all citizens in the United States, regardless of color. And that's when Confederate flags started to be flown in state capitals. And you can put two and two together and ask yourself, is that heritage? Is that what suddenly promoted it? Or was it a way to object to African Americans in the United States being able to vote, being able to get jobs, and making some strides towards equality with other citizens.
Sure. But what motivated Republicans to kind of take up that cause?
Kyle?
I've been talking about this with some friends of mine, and I, so detached from the Confederate flag and what it actually really means to people in the South. I mean, I could speculate on what it, I don't know. I mean, I think it means a lot of things to a lot of different people. And it's hard because, I grew up here in Ketchikan. At the Confederate flag is watching the Dukes of Hazzard. That's all I knew was on top of the General Lee. That's not a joke. I mean, right. That's true. A lot of people are so disconnected. Right. But it is interesting because, Lyndon Johnson built his legislative power on that old South and then flipped it and was the leader of the civil rights and really lost right in that era that you're talking about. See, Bob lived that era. I'm so young, I don't even know what happened back in the 60s. But it is interesting that Johnson built his legislative power on that old Southern Democrat base, and then during the civil rights when he made that power play and really it was Rayburn, I think it was Sam Rayburn was his mentor, broke his heart and flipped over out of that Southern Democrat sort of way and went towards civil rights. So I don't really know how to answer your question. I mean, yeah, to me, it's not relevant. I mean, I know it's very important to a lot of people, but I don't get
it. Yeah, and to me, it's relevant, and it's a good question. Because
it is a good question.
For many people, and I would urge you and other listeners, if you haven't listened to President Obama's eulogy in Charleston on June 26th, Google it and listen to it, whether you like President Obama or don't like President Obama. He'll answer the question, because for many people, for many black people, the Confederate flag in the South represented a lot more than heritage. It represented slavery and oppression, and every time they saw it, that's what it represented to them. And some, and I'm not saying all, people who wanted it flown on public buildings were well aware of that. And that's why, you know, South Carolina moved it from the top of the State House to a monument on the grounds of the State House. And that's what Governor Nikki Haley said is going to come down if the legislature approves it. Mm-hmm. And they will. Mississippi's going to change its flag. Alabama's taking down flags. And there has been a cultural shift at long last. Unfortunately, it took a murder of 9 black religious people in a church to get to that point and to have a discussion in this country about race and about the role of the Confederate flag. What does it symbolize? And anyway, that's my answer. I want to go back to the legislature, though, if we can.
Okay, Caleb, I want to thank you for calling in. We appreciate your question.
Yeah, thanks, Caleb.
Yeah, thank you. You're the first caller we've had on the show. Yeah, thank you very much.
Bob will give you the T-shirt off of his back.
Yep. So, yeah, I want to go back to the legislature because, you know, Kyle brought up a good point. They made a big issue about raises that had been negotiated that they had approved. It comes to them, and it was a 3-year deal. They approved it. And they either should have lived with it or said, hey, Governor, we think times are so tough and the budget, we're in such dire straits. Would you ask the unions to open up negotiations for this 3rd year? Maybe they'll give us some concessions. Or maybe
they wouldn't. Right. But you could at least ask.
But
they're never going to, because the unions will never, and here's to be fair, the unions will say that all day long, but they'll never open up negotiations. You know what they'll say? We have a contract, which is true, which is right, but they'll never. So it's a hollow offer.
Well, I'm going to prove you wrong, and I'm not saying you're wrong in 2015 because that may have happened. But I can tell you when Bill Sheffield impounded 10% of our school district funding in 1986, we asked the union to reopen up, the teachers union, NEA, to reopen negotiations, and they did. And there was a reduction in pay, which was restored when Bill Sheffield in the spring of that year, when oil rebounded and we got full funding.
The difference is,
but they did.
The difference is we have money. Okay. We just can't agree on how to get to it. In those days, we didn't have any money in reserves.
Right. So anyway, I want to
It's a hollow. It's a hollow.
Okay, and you're right. The union very well may have, and for all I know, did say, hey, we're not budging.
This is for my friend. If Chris Stuck's out there listening, you know what we call them up in Juneau? Those helpful union guys.
Right. But the same legislature that was after those overpaid.
It's an acronym.
You know, state employees who are in the executive branch, what did they do? They turned right around, and I didn't know this till yesterday when I was here doing a little research for this, but I know some other things I'm bringing up. They gave their own staff a 2.5% raise. You would have thought they would lead by example and tighten their own belts first. So they gave a raise that they didn't have to. It was not negotiated. The staff are exempt. I don't know if that's technically true, but it wasn't. They're not in the union that they were trying.
Yeah, the legislative staff are at the beck and call. If they don't like your shirt, they can fire you without any recourse.
Right. So
that's important. You can't just dismiss that because, and I'm going to defend legislative employees. I was a legislative employee, and there's zero job security, none whatsoever. Literally, you could walk in with the wrong pair of shoes on and be fired. You have no recourse. None whatsoever. So, you know, there's a lot of criticism of it. And I also say, I don't know what the overall legislative budget ended up being, if that increased or decreased. But maybe they took assets from some other part of the legislature and shifted it over to
And that may be. And certainly,
we're not going to let you get away with splitting hairs around here, Bob.
No, but I'm talking about what I feel is the hypocrisy on the part of legislative leadership going after raises for people in social services, for state troopers, for people on the ferries, and so on. But they had no problem in part of the final solution to their budget problem not holding the line for themselves so that they could go into next year's budget and tell the governor, we were tough on our own. The other thing they did.
Well, they don't have to negotiate. They're negotiating with themselves. They're going to be tough on yourself.
Right. So the other thing they did, which people should be aware of, and I've been doing my best to publicize this for the last month, state legislators under an obscure IRS code.
Why is it obscure, though?
Have the option of taking either per diem at the federal rate or being on the state per diem system. The federal rate during the session in Juneau is about $230 a day. In the summer in Anchorage, it's $292 a day. In the state system, when Governor Walker travels, he gets $60 a day for food, and if he has lodging, he gets it reimbursed. Otherwise, if he stays with a friend or bunks with somebody and they split the room, he gets, $100 a day plus 60 or whatever. That's what state employees do. If they travel for a long time, there's a long-term state per diem rate, which is a little bit less. What do you think these guys did? Which system, the 292 a day, regardless of expenses, or the 60 for food plus reimbursement for lodging, do you think these people did? The leadership, and it's not just the current leadership, this has been ongoing for some time, decided that it would be very lucrative if they used this kind of federal overreach to loot the state treasury.
Wow.
And put thousands of dollars into their pockets beyond their expenses. What business would reimburse its employees thousands of dollars above expenses for travel, for meals and lodging?
Well, at least your former boss did it.
None that
didn't
I know
get
of.
Federal per diem? Didn't Mark Vegas get federal per diem?
No, actually, let's get back to that.
Does Lisa? Does Dan Sullivan?
Let's get back. Well, I'll talk about
why that. Why is it a federal rate then?
It's a federal.
Don't they get it?
No. Let me clarify that
because
for
they're
you.
Independently wealthy and they don't have to have.
Let me clarify that because it applies. As people might know, I used to work for Mark Begich until he was not reelected. I'm familiar with that system. What happens in Congress is you get reimbursed for your meals and lodging. If I go to Washington, D.C., and I stay with a friend, as I did to try to save the taxpayer some money, I got zero. I did get reimbursement for meals. If Mark Begich travels or Lisa Murkowski travels, same thing. They get reimbursed for their meals and lodging, if any. And unlike the state and maybe some other governments, if you have a drink of alcohol, you must cross it off your bill because the U.S. The U.S. Senate does not reimburse you.
So what has this got to do basically?
I'm going to get to it. We just had a special session. We had the leadership expressing concern about the state budget. They want to reduce expenses. They want to take away raises. Mark Newman, the chair of House Finance, got, I believe, $9,000 during the special session, 7 to 9, some large figure like that, for living at his home. He commuted to the LIO in Anchorage where they held the special session. Senator Kathy Geisel from Anchorage, same thing. She got thousands of dollars. Liesl McGuire, senator from Anchorage, thousands of dollars.
Yet they're still getting elected by their constituents.
Well,
so what are you going to either stop it completely?
Well, that may be.
And I
will say no Democrat nor most Republicans from South Central or Mat-Su elected to take per diem. But everyone who did, everyone who just took per diem, and in most cases it amounted to thousands of dollars for living at home, were Republicans. And I think that's wrong. And I think it's absurdly wrong when you're preaching out of one side of your mouth, we need to cut expenses.
Well, actually,
we need to cut expenses,
the most expensive legislator was a Democrat. Donnie Olson. What are you talking about?
He's from Northwest. Donnie Olson was not living at home and commuting.
You know why? Because
I don't know.
Because all the Democrats that are in the minority caucus, basically, except for Scott Kawasaki, live in Anchorage. It's an easy giveaway. They got together. This is what happened, Bob, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. Is the caucus got together, and they said, hey, you know what we're going to do? Nobody take per diem. Then when it's over, we're going to put out a press release, and we're going to show everybody that we didn't take per diem. And some of them up on the majority will, and some won't. But the ones that do, we're going to catch them. We're going to get them. Don't say anything. And then they go to special session, and none of them claim per diem, which is fine. And I'm sure some of them, you know, quote, unquote, suffered a little bit and didn't get the gravy. But, you know, I mean, it was calculated. Don't think that didn't happen because they were Democrats.
Well, let me ask you, Kyle, why would, in this day and age, now I can sort of understand them padding their salaries, which is really what this is, when they get paid $20,000 a year and... It was a 120-day session, and they used this money to pad their salaries because they knew it would be controversial to give a raise. Well, they did give themselves a raise, and that's fine. They make $50,000
They didn't give themselves a raise. The commission on the governor's commission on executive salaries gave them a raise.
Okay.
They had to say no to it.
Right. Okay, so
they actually had to say no. Didn't just take it, Bob.
They actually had to say no. Who passed the law that set up the governor's commission to look at their salaries? Okay,
but it was signed by the governor,
right? So and
Palin, I think. Remember her?
Right. So it's their creation. So their salary went to $50,000, and it went from 120-day session to 90 days. And I realize a lot of them do some legislative work outside of session, and you know I don't have any problem with $50,000, but when they still use federal overreach, when it puts money from the state treasury into their bank accounts, that is wrong. And, you know, Alaskans might have looked the other way back when salaries were 20 and the treasury was flush with dough, and they did that. Well, now their salaries have more than doubled. We're not flush. My question is, should they be on the state per diem system every other state employee,
Bob,
instead of electing, while it's legal,
Bob,
but they don't have to take the federal per diem rate. They could get their $60 a day and reimbursement for reasonable expenses like every other state employee.
Bob.
They're state employees.
Bob.
They're not federal employees.
No, nobody cares.
Well, I care.
No, they don't.
I care.
Nobody cares.
I bet there's at least one listener out there who didn't know that, and they care.
Probably
going
to say, Bob, we don't care about that. Let's talk about something else.
No, actually, we have a caller on line one, Steve, and Steve has a question that might fit right in here. So.
Nice.
Steve, are you there? Hello, Steve. Well?
Caller, I've been listening since the show started, and you're awesome.
Oh,
well, thank you, Steve.
So
he was talking about
I'm talking to Debbie.
Sorry, we didn't hear the first part.
Steve, I want to thank you. It's the quiet one. Do you want to ask your question, or I have it on a piece of paper? Why don't you ask?
Okay. My question is, what can Southeast Republicans and Democrats do to protect not just Southeast Alaska, but all of rural Alaska from capital creep? And, you know, filling right into this, you know, how Anchorage is what it is and all the power is there. What's one thing you two can agree on that we should do to protect the way of life that is part of that is Southeast Alaska?
Well,
go ahead, Kyle.
I'll take my answer off there. Thanks again, Deb.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks,
there,
Steve.
I would say, and I think Bob will agree with this, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, and I think it's happening to a certain extent, is Southeast legislators have got to pull on the rope in the same direction. We've done that for many years. And we've got a good group of folks. You know, Dan is new. He's just learning what's going on up there in the House. Sam Keto III in downtown Juneau taking over for Beth Kurtula. You know Sam, Bob, right?
Yep.
Yeah. He's been around a long time, the young guy, smart, knows what is the scoop. I mean, he started off rolling in Juneau. I mean, he knows where all the doors are and the tricks of the trade.
And Kathy Munoz, who's a Republican from Juneau.
Kathy's been up there for a long time.
Dennis
She's
Egan,
good.
Jonathan Christ Tompkins
but
from
Jonathan,
Sipka, you know, very smart, very hardworking.
Yeah. But, I mean, even outside of, I mean, Dennis has been there a long time. Kathy now, she's been there almost a decade now. I'm really excited about the Jonathan and Sam and Dan. And, you know, I mean, we came within a few votes of having Sherry Klein up there, which would have been just the same because it's new blood. It's new people. And they seem to really be working well together, even with Kathy and Dennis. Certain things, you know, but I think that's what we have to do. We have to go back when I served up there. I mean, me and Billy Thomas and Beth.
Cotula.
Yeah. We all worked together. I mean, we sat down and tried to find a way to get where we could. And I think that's what it takes, don't you think?
Well, yeah, well, I think that's not only what it takes. I mean, that's what it takes. But just to go beyond that, and I think it's implied by what you said, legislators in Southeast and other rural communities need to be united and put Alaska and their communities first, put it above political party, and work together on a bipartisan basis. That used to happen. And it happens now with, I think they may call it the Coastal Caucus, where they know they have similar issues and they discuss them and try to have a unified viewpoint. But it's hard to do that when one party is shut out of the budget unless they need to tap the constitutional budget reserve.
Yeah, they're not shut out of the budget. They're the ones that had the leverage to hold this whole thing up.
At the end.
Oh, for the whole session.
But, you know, how many Democrat amendments were accepted during the budget process?
It's not like the majority didn't know at the beginning of session they didn't need three votes.
Right.
And then this Laura Reinbold, this lady from the MATSU, who didn't vote for the budget, and they kicked her out on her ear. And now they're down four votes in the caucus.
Right, but the point that I'm trying to make, the budget doesn't necessarily reflect the views of the Coastal Caucus. So
no.
You know, until some, and I can't say off the top of my head what needs to change in that regard, but somehow they just need to be more united, perhaps not vote for the budget if it doesn't have, you know, look at what's happening to the ferry system. They're, you know, reducing by far more than any other transportation system, any highway system in the state of Alaska, the Alaska Marine Highway System. I don't know anybody in Southeast Alaska, whether they're a politician of either party, an elected or non-elected official in any community, and the average person on the streets in Southeast Alaska who doesn't feel that the Alaska Marine Highway System is critical to us.
How do you protect
that? They're laying up the ships.
So let me ask you this, Bob. Let me ask you this, Mayor Weinstein, former mayor, which is a non-political position, but you're sitting to the right of me, which is interesting. Anyway, okay, so during this whole shutdown, this whole government shutdown, basically the entire state needed three votes to access the CBR. Because Laura Reinbold, she voted to access it. She was already in on it. They had 27 votes. They needed three votes to leverage this entire thing. We have three Southeast legislators in the minority. And you're talking about splitting off and doing what's right for Southeast and for the region. I would argue that maybe those three guys didn't do that. They stuck with the minority. They could have peeled off and cut a deal with the speaker. And they could have gone to the speaker and said, hey, we want the Marine Highway funded.
Right.
We will split off from this caucus of politics and vote on behalf of the Marine Highway and our issues. But we're not going to. We're going to stick with the leadership of the minority and fight for the statewide worker instead of the region.
Well, that's
what
a good,
say you that, now, Bob Weinstein?
Well, say you're wrong because
what? Because there's no holes that in that logic.
That implies
that's a pure piece of cheese.
That implies that people in the Democratic Independent minority that their only issue was the Marine Highway System. That was one. Education funding was another. Funding the employee contracts was another. So three of them were not going to get peeled off. In my opinion, and I don't have any insider information.
Maybe they could have cut a deal on all of it.
For one issue, well, yeah, they cut a deal on it when they said no CBR. And at some point, well, I do want to answer the question. Then I want to talk, we have a caller, I guess, but then I want to talk about the current efforts to begin to raid the permanent fund. Because I think that's a big issue. But Steve asked about capital creep.
It's not raiding the fund either. But we'll
Steve asked about capital creep, and I think we just need to briefly touch on it. And I can't remember during the Knowles years or Murkowski years how many commissioners lived in Anchorage versus Juneau, but I would say probably most in Juneau. And I think capital creep really began with Sarah Palin and more commissioners being allowed to live in Anchorage because she didn't want to live in Juneau either, from what I can remember. You know, spent 300 days in Wasilla in 2 years.
They were
getting state per diem.
$60
for which she was criticized for getting $60, right. Not $292 for living at home. And then I think Sean Parnell just...
You know who demanded that their commissioners live in Juneau?
Go ahead.
Frank Murkowski.
Okay, well, very good.
Frank the Bank.
And I don't
he demanded
know.
It.
Oh, no names.
No, it's
Frank
okay.
Frank the Bank.
But
so, there's other names.
And my understanding is when this issue was discussed with Governor Walker, what I remember reading or hearing him say is he was going to try to have more commissioners reside in
Bob, it doesn't matter. The commissioners don't matter. Juneau. What they're doing is they're going to start moving positions
right.
to Anchorage. The commissioners is a smokescreen. It's the rank and file.
Right. And I want to tell what I think is a famous story. Governor Hickel was speaking to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce or some civic group like that, and he said, I'm considering a proposal to reduce the number of state employees by 3,500. And there was applause. He said, I'm going to eliminate every state job in Anchorage, and made his point that all the state jobs were not in Juneau by any means, that there's state employees in Anchorage. There's certainly some in Ketchikan.
Yeah, let's talk about capital creep and about but we want to.
We have a caller.
Yeah,
let's get the caller.
Rein Bob in over here.
Okay. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
All right, ask your question, please.
Yes, I would like to know what you guys think about the governor's idea about raising taxes and capping the permanent fund dividend.
Sure, I'll take a stab at that, being the so-called liberal in this panel, although I think I'm probably more conservative than Mr. Johansson in a lot of ways.
In his use of butter, I think.
Fiscal. it's pretty clear. You know, the governor's doing the responsible thing. Frank Murkowski, when he was elected, had the Conference of Alaskans to talk about similar issues. I happened to be invited to that session in Fairbanks. I think I was the token Democrat or something. But seriously, talked about different issues, had some good debates. That's what needs to happen now. What should the size of the state budget be? What can it be reduced to first, to the point that Alaskans say, we know that there's a need for some revenue? And the governor has said, we need to look at capping the permanent fund. We need to look at some kind of broad-based tax, whether it be an income tax or a sales tax. So, yeah, I think everything should be on the table. That's not to say that all is going to happen or that any of it's going to happen. I mean, we have an election year coming up. I don't know if the legislature will approve some major change to the permanent fund dividend program in an election year. And I certainly would doubt if they're going to institute or reinstitute, because we had an income tax until during the Jay Hammond years, it was not only suspended, it was eliminated. So, Kyle, what do you think? You think there's much chance of some broad-based revenue approach to fill in the hole? Or do you think they'll punt again, take funds from the Constitutional Budget Reserve and other state savings accounts until there's zero left?
Well, here's the problem. And this is where you get into there being a functional problem with the way the state government is put together for the funding. The CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, is going to be gone in a couple of years. It won't be there. There's not going to be a pot of money anymore to fill the hole. So a couple of years from now, instead of trying to get three votes to access the CBR won't be there. There won't be any money in there. The statutory budget reserve is going to be empty, too. That's another account that we have up there. All the money that's been shuffled away into all of the little holes and corners of the budgets is all being pulled out these last couple of years because they're looking for places to get money to fund projects. So this is all a process. But here's the bottom line, and this is my big issue. On one hand, the state sends everybody a check in the form of a dividend from the Department of Revenue right there in the SOB in downtown Juneau. You've got a whole floor of people, and they're sending out permanent fund checks. And now there's these proposals to start doing income taxes and statewide sales taxes and all of these tax revenues. In the same building, right down the hall, they're going to start hiring people to collect money from you. So the state's going to be giving me a check, a dividend check. They're going to hire a bunch of people, a bunch of state workers, to give me a dividend check. I'm going to take it, and then they're going to hire a bunch of state workers to figure out how much that they're going to take back from me. And I feel like this, they're giving it to me, and they're taking it away. Why don't we just cut the middleman out? Why do we have to have the government?
What's the middleman? Don't the government eliminate the dividend?
No, you get the dividend. Why is government handing me a check on one hand, and then I'm writing a check on the other hand, giving it right back to the government? Who benefits? The people who process the checks, the people, the employees. Well, it just makes bigger government. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know how many employees there would be.
It's fundamentally
insane. I think there could be an app for that. But let me get back to Jay Hammond. He showed up.
Are you getting back to Jay Hammond because you can't answer my question?
No, I'm going to answer your question. Oh, okay. Jay, you know, we have a lot of people who work in the state who don't live in the state, and they make a lot of money.
You're not going to balance the budget on legislative staffers and a couple of permanent fund people who live in Seattle.
I'm not talking about legislative staffers, although if you want to talk about that issue, there's tens of thousands of workers who come up here, work in the oil fields, fish, and whatever, and then they go back to Texas.
It doesn't add up.
It's hundreds of millions.
No,
so,
it's not.
I'll go back to Governor Hammond's proposal. He showed up at Governor Murkowski's Conference of Alaskans in Fairbanks in 2004 or 5, whenever it was, uninvited, and sort of said, hey, can I speak to you guys? And sort of over the objections of some people who didn't want to hear from him, the group said, certainly, we would love to hear your views, Governor Hammond. And to put it in a nutshell, he said, this is what I think. I think the dividend should be doubled and the income tax reinstituted and that it be capped at the newly doubled dividend. So Alaskans with some money would have net zero. Oil field workers who make 100 or 200 grand that they take back to Texas would pay $2,000, $4,000
a year. So let's say you do that.
And that is a partial. It doesn't fill the hole. It's a partial hole. Capping the dividend might be a partial hole. There's a number of alternatives. We just had a big debate on oil taxation, and SB 21 not only passed the legislature but was upheld by the voters. There's all sorts of things that can be done to collectively, if you will, or comprehensively address some of the budget hole. But at the end of the day, there has to be additional reductions. We saw reductions this year. We saw reductions in departments. We saw troopers closing offices in Girdwood and Talkeetna. But guess how many legislative employees lost their jobs?
I know of two.
Essentially none. One was drunk and the other was...
Allegedly
drunk. And the other one pled guilty to using a gun in a domestic violence thing. And she was out of state for well over 18 weeks is the max for family leave. 12 under feds, 18 under the state family leave
act.
Are you saying
that they broke the law?
She was gone for 28 weeks. Nobody knows because the legislature won't tell us.
Because their personnel rules.
But they could say she wasn't compensated all that time.
It's none of our business. It's a personnel issue.
If that was a member of the governor's staff, they'd be having hearings on how did this person get 28 weeks. But the point I'm trying to make is, other than some seasonal tour guides in the Capitol building in Juneau, which is empty, that takes cruise ship passengers or other visitors to Juneau in the Capitol, those jobs were eliminated. But the staff, and I'm not...
How did we get back to legislative staff again?
I'm not criticizing
the
staff.
Why are we focusing on legislative staff?
I'm talking about the legislature has no problem.
We're trying to balance the budget here.
The legislature has no problem cutting budgets in the executive branch, closing trooper offices, their regular staff, which has increased, I believe, and I don't have the numbers, but I believe if you would look at the numbers, how many legislative staffers were there in 2005?
Sorry, John, I wouldn't give them this information.
How many were there in 2010? my understanding from conversations is it's been a significant increase. The legislative budget went up 23% in the last 2 years. I mean, if there isn't room for a reduction, if the legislature is unwilling to lead by example, how do they expect Alaskans to follow when they're asking for revenue enhancements? Or to, from my perspective, some of the proposals I've seen literally would raid the permanent fund.
Time out.
Well, I'm going to ask for time out. So, caller, are we good? Did anybody answer anything here for you?
I couldn't tell you.
All righty. Well,
I think, you know, in order to do that, you'd have to be there for as long as the session lasts, and you'd get the full insight. When I was in Juneau, we were going through what we're going through now, only in a smaller light. And we looked at taxes and laying off people. And increasing the permanent fund, actually just capping the permanent fund, and we would use the other half for services, state budget.
Right.
I don't think taxes will help anything but make everybody a little angrier.
Right. And since you've sort of identified yourself, Representative Williams, I know that you've been through this. And when Frank Murkowski was governor, the Permanent Fund Board endorsed, I don't know if they proposed it or if it came out of the administration, there was the so-called POMV approach to managing the Permanent Fund, where 5% of it could be spent sustainably every year.
That's what you just said.
And the reason they could do that is their expected rate of return was about 8.25%. They could inflation proof it with 3%, and then there'd be 5% available first for dividends, and then the balance used to fund state government. That conversation needs to happen again, but from what I understand, and I'm sure Kyle will correct me if I'm wrong, even if they do that, that's hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not $3 billion. That's the hole the state has, and that most people who are not in state government, who follow oil prices, think will be the case for at least another year or 2 years. There's not going to be...
Well, first of all, nobody, if anyone can predict oil prices, you know, they're not going to spend time even talking to anybody in the world. They're just going to be sitting on a pile of money. Nobody's going to predict the oil prices. So you can get off that horse. The other thing that I had to say time out on is you cannot say raiding the permanent fund in this studio while I'm here, because that is impossible. You cannot raid the permanent fund, Bob. You can use the earnings. You cannot see. This is the big trick.
No,
this,
I'm not talking about raiding the principal.
Well, that's what you said.
But a misuse
when
of the
you
earnings.
Say, Bob, now you said earnings. Now you said earnings.
Right. There's an earnings reserve, and
we know
that.
Well, then you can't say raid the permanent fund.
If that is used inappropriately, it's a raid. If that is used when legislators
it's
managed by the permanent
you
fund.
Are,
the legislature can access it.
It is not the permanent fund.
Kyle, I've had enough conversations with legislators over
You can't call it the permanent fund.
I have had legislators.
You have to call it the earnings reserve. Call it what it is, and I'll stop.
I have had conversations with legislators of both parties on accessing, this is some years ago, what would happen in your district if you accessed the earnings reserve to help fund state government.
Right.
And to the person, including Republicans, they said that would be viewed as raiding the permanent fund.
You know why? Because people like you call it raiding the permanent fund. You perpetuate that inaccurate description, and it's to the detriment of Alaska. And I'm not going to let you do it while you're here.
Okay.
You can't do it.
That's right. But as long as legislators are looting the state treasury to take thousands of dollars and per diem the federal rate above and beyond their expenses, that I will keep calling it a raid on the permanent fund.
No.
When they act responsibly, I'll start acting a little bit more responsibly, but in your view at least.
We've come full circle. We're right back. Thank you for calling. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so we had another caller. He's not on the line, but I think this is the local question. He's curious where all the cigarette tax money goes is allotted to.
The local one?
It doesn't say one way or the other.
I think this on the state level, they're required to spend a certain amount because of federal rules on education and such.
Tobacco education.
Yeah,
stuff.
But the local stuff, because that's on the agenda, right? It's been put on the agenda to.
They're talking about like a $3 per pack tax throughout the city and borough. Well, borough, which includes the city, of course.
How that goes. You're the former mayor. You should know how they spend that money down there.
My take on it from reading the newspaper, listening to KRBD news stories, is they're talking about different purposes. In other words, I think they can do what four members of both bodies decide that they should do with the money. It's I'm not aware that there's any requirement that they spend a cigarettes excise tax that is implemented locally on a specific program. I could be wrong. Perhaps somebody who knows the answer can call in and say, Bob, you're wrong. And here's the fact, but it's a local issue.
We have 3 minutes left. How would you like to wrap this up, our first show?
Well, I'm going to wrap it up by raising one more issue, and that's the issue of Medicaid expansion, which was a priority for Governor Walker. Governor Parnell did not want to do that, even though it would benefit up to 40,000 Alaskans. It would create 4,000 jobs, bring in $1 billion in new revenue. And think about it. If this had been Bush care or Reagan care, what do you think might have happened during the Parnell years? Would they have turned down? They have no problem taking $1 billion for highway money, the feds pay 90%.
I will say.
Is there something wrong? But I want to get to my point because we have 3 minutes. I understand there's different. I understand that there's a lot of different viewpoints on Obamacare, although most people in the country, it's sort of split now between proponents and opponents. But what bothers me is the legislature didn't even have the guts and the decency to have a vote on that issue. They could have voted it up or down, and I think the reason they wouldn't vote on it, that the Republican legislative leadership refused to allow a vote, is they knew that enough of their members would actually vote to do what their constituents want, along with the minority, and a majority of both houses would have passed that.
Yeah,
and I think it's wrong for them to not have a vote on it. I mean, we hear some of the same legislators that wouldn't have a vote have criticized the Senate or the House.
Why doesn't Bill Walker do it himself? Why did he even put it in the legislative arena? He doesn't have to. He can expand it himself.
Well, if that's
throw it in the arena? Everybody's playing politics, Bob, not just the Republicans.
And I have no idea what legal advice he's getting on what his ability is to implement it. I hope
let's get him on the show next time.
I hope that if you're right, he does implement it by executive order.
How'd we do, Deb? Can we come back? Do we get to do it again?
I think you could probably come back. We had a caller earlier this evening who was gratified to have the program on KRBD, political junkie from way back. Thank you for the discourse. So well done, gentlemen. Thank you so much. We don't know when we'll be back to do this again. We'll give you, listening audience, plenty of notice. And I love the idea. Let's invite the governor. Why not?
Put him in the crossfire.
Thanks, guys.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks, listeners.
Thank you, Deb. Thanks, Kyle. And most of all, thank you, listeners,
yeah, thanks for calling in,
putting up with us for the last 60 minutes.
Excellent.